Hey, how's it going? Welcome back to Soapbox, season three. We're back. Hadn't heard any complaints about the new format, so I'm gonna keep it going, walking and talking. I kind of like this. It's, giving me get my steps in, get my thoughts out. I had a quiz earlier today and a paper due, and I've got a big exam tomorrow, so I'm taking this little time before I get back into the weeds to walk around and talk a little bit into the void. So thank you for being an ear in that void, as it were. Just a few things I want to talk about today, and I'll sort of break them down now. I've got one video game I want to talk about. I've got one food that I want to talk about. What else was there? I have the video game and the food so clearly in my mind. Like, these are important topics for me to discuss right now that are completely. But I could have sworn I had another one, and I'm going to think of it here in a moment. So, three topics today. Quick, easy, three, in and out, we're done. By the way, hopefully, on whatever platform you're listening to this, you can see the custom artwork for the episode. I liked all those designs I put together so much that I've decided I'm going to use a different one for each episode of this season, just for grins. So hopefully you can see those. I had a little bit of an issue with iTunes, but otherwise, fingers crossed. But let's jump right in. So first things first, I started a new job. I think I'd actually just started it really when I recorded the first episode, but of this season, that is. But it's a fantastic job. I really, really love it. It's interesting work with great people, and I mean, it's everything you want in a job. I'm interested, I'm challenged, but not too challenged. Like, it's not impossible. And one of the sort of challenges around the work, that's not a challenge in the work, is that it's not, like, it's not like when I'm in Tulsa and I drive to an office or work remotely like I did for one of the people I worked for over the summer. It's in office and I commute on the train, which, as someone from Oklahoma, is a little bit different. And, luckily I've got a bit of train experience under my belt, but it's a horse of a different color to take the train for commute than it is, as a tourist going around a city, I think. And I'm in Philly, so it's SEPTA, and it's interesting. I'm in my third week. This is my third second full but third week overall of work, and I've commuted every day, pretty much. I've worked from home a couple of days, but commuted pretty much every day. And one of the things that you notice when you're doing the same commute every day is there's oddities and there's consistent inconsistencies, if you know what I mean. Here's an example. Some days I'll be taking the train and it pulls up and it's automated. Doors slide open themselves, stairs drop down by themselves, you get in, it's automated. Obviously, someone's driving it and there's someone taking tickets, but that part's automated. Other times, it's human. And there's this, like, it's like they started upgrading the train system and haven't finished yet, and they're sort of phasing out the old trains. But, so some days I'll go and there will be a person letting me on the train, and other days it's, you don't actually interact with a person until you get to the office. But, one of the, interesting things with the commute is obviously you have to pay for the train. Although I've seen some interesting arguments recently that making a public transit system like that free actually encourages ridership, which obviously is more environmentally friendly than, than private transportation, than driving. But here in Philly, that's not the case. It's for my particular commute, $4 each way, right? And when I was talking to one of the conductors after a few days on the commute, and he'd been working the line that week, and so he sort of was recognizing me, and he was like, oh, you know, if you, and knew that I paid cash every day, and he was like, oh, you know, if you want, you should buy the weekly pass or the monthly pass or whatever, like the recurring, you know, like commuter pass. And he was like, but, you know, that'll save you 50 cents a trip or something like that. And I was like, oh, that's a pretty good deal. That, I mean, obviously that sounds like the best option. But then I went, you know, the next day, and on my commute to work, a conductor just never came through my car, and so I didn't have to pay, and I saved four whole dollars for that week. And then the next day it happened again, and so that's, I'm up to $8 saved in a week by, you know, just human error. And so it becomes this question of, okay, do I comply with the system completely and give them the benefit of the doubt and assume that, yeah, someone's always going to check me and save 50 cents a day? Or do I gamble a little bit on human error and pay cash every day and just hope that every once in a while, you know, I'm not going to have to pay? And I'm not sure. I mean, I think, you know, I'm kind of leaning towards going with just cash every day because it's worked so far, but I'm not sure. But the commute's been, you know, and this is going to sort of blend into the food topic a little bit. The commute's been an adjustment. Because, as I'm sure I've covered on the show before, I am not a morning person in the slightest. Not remotely a morning person. I am very much a mid-afternoon to 10 p.m. person. But because of when my classes are and when I can go to work, I've sort of had to become a bit of a morning person. And the way the trains work out... you know, it's a very bizarre commute that I am glad that I tried before. Like, I did a test run a couple days before I actually started work. And I'm so glad I did that because it's a weird commute. The train in the mornings, they have an express train that, you know, goes through all sort of the neighborhoods of, you know, suburban outside of Philly, all the neighborhoods, you know, Paoli, Thorndale, Bryn Mawr, all of those, and Villanova. And then at Bryn Mawr, which is in towards the city from Villanova, from Bryn Mawr on, it's express. It doesn't stop anymore. Here's the thing. My stop where I work is a couple stops past that. So what I have to do, actually, is I have to get off. I get on one train at Villanova, ride it for a couple stops, get off, get on another train that's just the regular train that hits everything, but starts at Bryn Mawr. That one does. So it's not like I can wait for that, you know, normal train at Villanova. I have to go to Bryn Mawr, get off, get on the new train, and then go two more stops. It's weird. But, you know, the train commute, I think is... I really prefer it to a driving commute, you know, in my, you know, few experiences with that. Like in high school, I commuted to an after-school job for a couple years. I think it was a couple years. It was a long time, but it was a long time in high school, so it could have been 6 months. I think it was 2 years though. And I had my commute routine down. I would leave school, I would hit up the McDonald's, unhealthy, but I was in high school, and I would get either a Diet Coke and a large fry. Or once they started doing the all-day breakfast, I would do a Diet Coke and a sausage biscuit and a hash brown. It was cheap. It was like $3, $3 or $4 for all of that. Fill me up, get me through work. Commute down, jam to some podcasts, go to work, leave after like 5:30 or 6, miss the traffic back, and it was great. And... so I did that for a really long time, and then those kids were definitely getting high out here. If you heard those people just walk by, past me, oh my God, they were getting high. Wow. Whew. I'm just walking down this path, sort of in this back part, like I described last week, and walking back past down this path that these kids came down, and oh wow, did they get high. Just the smell of weed is really strong back here. But anyway, you know, car commute, you know, you have to be driving, you can listen to a podcast, that's about it. Train commute, I found, on days when I am completely awake, which is not super consistent, it's great for reading. I've been reading a lot more, which has been really nice. It's great for a little bit of homework, although I try and keep homework separated from work. You know, I try and delineate my day in half between work and school, and keep them separate and keep that time for myself. But, you know, like, it really enables you to do more, and it makes, you know, that commute from Connecticut or Jersey into New York City or into Philly make a lot more sense. Like, oh, you can get on the train and you can get stuff done, and you don't have to be active in your driving. You just have to, you know, be on a train with your head on your shoulders and keeping track of where you're going. But my routine has sort of started to manifest, I think, in the morning part of my commute. My afternoon part I'm still figuring out, because the morning's consistent. The morning is up at 7:45, out the door at 8:15, on the train at 8:25, at my stop at 8:45, etc. Afternoon part, because my work days are different lengths, because it sort of conforms to my class schedule, that part's a little less coherent right now, but in the mornings, the best part of my morning routine, and the best part of any day, I think, I've gotten addicted. And here's the second thing I wanted to talk about, the food part. I've gotten addicted to plain bagels toasted with plain cream cheese. It's such a bland sounding food, right? I know it is. And I'm addicted. I picked one up from the local coffee shop on my part of Villanova's campus called Rosie's. And Rosie's had, you know, just got a plain bagel, toasted cream cheese. It was really good. I was like, oh, okay. Every once in a while, if I'm going to class, I'll stop there and get one. But then I started commuting to work, and I was like, oh, I should probably eat something before I go into the office. So I stop, hit up the Starbucks right there on my way to the office. Starbucks' bagels with cream cheese, they've got that on lock. Like, I know they're not made fresh or anything, and I mean, I've made bagels, and it's a tricky process, but however Starbucks does that, that, you know, mass production and then dissemination to all of their stores, they've done it really, really well. Like, it's a good bagel. It's like, you know, they warm it up, it's good warm, it warms up well. Like, it's tricky to reheat a bagel, I've found, you know, at least with the bagels that I've made, but, that's kind of become my routine, is pick up a bagel, a little bit of cream cheese, slather that on there. Oh, excellent, excellent. The food of life, I think, a good bagel. But yeah, that's sort of my spiel about commuting. And right now I'm kind of alternating between two books. I'm reading The River of Doubt, which is about Teddy Roosevelt's ill-fated trip down the River of Doubt in the Amazon rainforest. And then I'm also reading, I can never remember, because it's either Midnight's Children or Children of Midnight. And it was written by Salman Rushdie. I'm reading it in advance of reading his new book, Quixote. And I can never remember if it's Midnight's Children or Children of Midnight, because I read the introduction and he was like, yeah, I went back and forth between the two versions of the name and I wrote them down over and over and over until I was like, oh, this one's the one. And I read that and I was like, oh, that's funny. He didn't like decide exactly what the title was before. Like, it wasn't like he just it came to him that, oh, it's going to be called this. He knew he wanted to have those two words and wasn't sure how to put them together. But now I can't put them together in my head. I can't remember which one it is. But the River of Doubt is grueling. I mean, it's describing this absolutely mind-crushing journey that Roosevelt went on after losing his bid for a third term of the presidency. And, I mean, pretty much everything that could have gone wrong did. And obviously the Amazon rainforest is already pretty dangerous. And you add to that some people being incompetent, some people, you know, following orders that may not have been the best orders, add in some people thinking they're doing what's best for the group and absolutely failing. Sprinkle in a little bit of racism and colonialism, and it's interesting, it's fascinating, but absolutely grueling. Like, it's like, oh, you know, what they had to do is they had to start in Rio de Janeiro, I believe, and then travel to the head of the river. And even that journey, which had been done before, no one had ever followed it from the head to its end successfully, that they knew that civilization as we know it had done it. But people had traveled to the head of it. That alone, like, killed multiple people. Multiple people got sick, got injured. They lost a ton of their animals and supplies on that journey. And that was the journey to the journey. And then they actually get to the river and it's like, oh yeah, we don't have any canoes. We have to buy some from the local tribes. And we don't have a ton of food. And, oh, well, we do have the drinking water, but careful, there are piranhas and gators and snakes in it. And, I mean, absolutely grueling. Like, there's no letting up. But to sort of alleviate from that, I've been switching back to the Rushdie book, which is excellent, and I'm not very far into it yet. But, yeah, I've been trying to read more on my commute. I'm finding that that's just sort of a good time for non-labor things, if you know what I mean. Like, personal enrichment stuff. Sort of like this. Sort of like walking around and rambling to nobody. But, yeah, that's kind of the first and second thing. That's the commute and the food thing. The next thing I want to talk about is a new video game. And it's a small game, $15, and apparently, as a headline today, the fastest time to complete it is less than 4 minutes, and it came out like 3 days ago. The game is called Untitled Goose Game. It's a game where you play a goose, and you are basically given tasks to conduct around town with your beak and your honking, and you go around and you complete those tasks. And it is beautiful, it is funny, and it's one of the best game purchases I've made all year. It's so good. It has this really sort of, I saw one review call it a Tintin-esque style. It's very cartoony, very, I don't know if there's a word for this, like, it's all very, single-colored, like, there's not a whole lot of colorful detail to the goose, he's just white. You know, if you see, like, the water is just one shade of blue, so very cartoonish in that way, I guess, and, the way they did the soundtrack is phenomenal. It's this piano, like, sort of ragtimey soundtrack that escalates and calms down with your action. So the more action there is around you, the more the piano plays and the more honky-tonk, ragtimey it gets. And it's so much fun. It's really, really excellent. I was actually able to pick it up on discount somehow from Nintendo, but highly, highly recommend Untitled Goose Game because it's exquisite. I'm really looking forward to playing it on a plane next to some random people on my Switch and have them just be like sort of looking down and just so confused. Why is that guy playing a game as a goose? Because it's a great game. A really great game. From the developers of Firewatch, which I've never actually played, but I've heard it's really good. And apparently they finished Firewatch. Pretty successful game. I think it won some awards. Enough awards that I've heard of it without playing it. Which for an indie game is a big deal. And they were in their Slack or their Teams or whatever, and someone sent a picture of a goose from Wikipedia and was like, we should make a game about a goose. And then they did. And it's fantastic. Highly, highly recommend. It's on pretty much every platform. I think it's on the Epic Game Store for PC and then consoles. And yeah, I mean, I'm all for supporting indie games whenever possible, and this is an indie game that you shouldn't miss if you're in that market. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to play. I picked it up on Saturday. And the other thing I did Saturday, and this will be the final topic for the day, was I went to a friend's room in my building, and we branded, Baguette Study Hall, where we go, we make baguettes, and we do homework. And that's it, because I'd never actually made baguettes before, and she knew that I baked a lot, and she wanted to make baguettes, and so she was like, let's do this. And I was like, yes, let's do this. So Ari and I went, former guest and current girlfriend Ari, and I went, and we made baguettes with her, with our friend Zoe, and it was so fun. Baguettes are a very, very wet dough, which I didn't know. Very, very wet. And you do, I think it's 3 proofs. You do 2 bulk proofs and then 1 shaped proof, which for someone who's not a pretentious baker like me, that's rising. You let them rise 3 times. Twice when it's all the dough in a bowl, and once you've shaped the baguettes into baguettes. And yeah, 3 proofs. It's bread. It's 4 ingredients: yeast, salt, water, flour. I'm trying to remember the exact percentages. It's something like, I want to say it's 300 grams flour, 375 grams water, was the recipe that we used. And so very, very wet dough, but they turn out beautifully. They were kind of ugly. They were very rustic, very misshapen, but beautiful. I mean, I've never made bread with a crust that good. Like, I love my challah. I love making my challah. I loved my sourdough experiments over the summer. That was really fun. But I never got a good crust on those. And the crust on this bread, oh my Lord. It was so, so satisfying. Definitely one of the most fun baking experiences I've had. And coupled with some good studying, which was pretty cool. And hopefully we'll do that again. I think I was serious about it. I don't know how serious the other people were about like scaling up and trying to do like 4 loaves instead of 2 and baking a couple in my oven and a couple in her oven. And I actually have 2 baking trays, so I could bake 4 loaves in my own oven. I should start a baguette business. I don't have time for that, but a great question that my friends and I discussed the other day was, if you could pursue any passion or any hobby or any career without like fear of failure and without, you know, having to worry about actually being successful at it, but just being able to pursue the passion, what would you do? And while I love technology, I really do, I think it's important and I think I'm decent at it, and I love working in that field. You know, there's always since I started baking and actually getting kind of good at it, there's, you know, this little voice that's like, wouldn't it be cool to have like your own bakery? Wouldn't it be cool to, you know, make bread and sell it to people and have them, you know, share experiences over something that you've made? Wouldn't that be incredible? Wouldn't that be satisfying to be like, you know, sort of an artisan, sort of a craftsman like that? And I think things like that are so important. Things like craft and skill-based things. And I think computer science and development sort of can be like that. There can be a sort of craftsman-esque quality to development, but a lot of the time that's easy to forget about, where, you know, if you're making bread or you're making a, you know, you're crocheting a hat or something like that, there's this sort of rustic feel to it, this feel of like, not only is this something I'm doing, but this is something I could have done, you know, 100 years ago, and hasn't changed very much, which obviously in development you don't get that, and it changes constantly. But the rules of baking or crocheting or wood carving or whatever have stayed the same forever. But who knows, maybe I'll, maybe this is the year I drop out and I become a baker. I'm just kidding. My parents are listening to this and texting me and saying, oh, please don't. But yeah, I'm looking forward to some more baguettes. Cause, oh my God, the crust. What a crust it was. Oh, like it was ridiculous. I've never had a bread. There was no steam in the oven. There was no steam bake. It was literally just the bread itself. It must have been something about the high water content. Hitting that high heat quickly. That crust came out perfectly. Chewy crust. I mean, exactly what you picture when you think of like a good French bread. That good thick crust that you can tear into, and oh my God. I don't have time tonight to make some, but maybe, I don't think I have time tomorrow to make some either. I guess I'll just have to wait for the weekend, but I'm definitely going to make some more. And oh my goodness, I want some bread right now. But, you know, I think that's about it for the day. I think that's about it for the week, actually. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate you indulging my rambles and tuning in. My hope is that, you know, at some point here in the near future, I can actually have time to sit down, do a traditional episode on a traditional mic. Hopefully this still sounds okay. It sounded okay last week. Maybe have some guests, get my roommates on an episode. I think that would be kind of fun. But yeah, Soapbox, follow the show, Instagram and Twitter at Soapbox with Jack. Merch is teespring.com/stores/soapbox. You can share the show, pardon me, if you want to share it. Obviously you can like share it from your preferred podcatcher, but if you want to just share it to someone and you don't know what podcatcher they're on, anchor.fm/thesoap is the URL that'll get you to like a page that has the download links for every podcast app, Spotify and Stitcher and Overcast and iTunes and all of them, Google Podcasts. But yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Oh, and I'm Jack Crawford.